Hello, my name is Rosemary George. I'm a master of wine, author of several books, including Chablis and the Wines of the South of France, which is my great enthusiasm in the world of wine.
You're listening to iWine Radio. My name is Lynn Crelo Chamberlain, host. We're continuing our conversation about the wines of Southern France. And I'm really still want to entice you to learn more and take the opportunity that is available to us through the French Wine Society to enroll in the Sud de France webinar, master level webinar. And so today on Wine and Dine, we have the pleasure of meeting Rosemary George, master of wine, who lives in Languedoc and is the author of The Wines of the South of France. She's joining us from her home in London, and she is, in fact, going to be one of the educators with the webinars. And Rosemary, if you don't mind, let me start by asking you, you divide your time between London and Languedoc? Is that how it goes?
That's it, yes. We have a holiday house in the Languedoc because we fell in love with the area when I was researching my book on the south of France 10 or more years ago. And so we spend about 3 to 4 months of the year there and the rest of the time in London or traveling.
It's a great
division. You know, it's a contrast of city and village, language, sunshine,
yes.
Grey skies in London at the moment. You know.
What time of year do you go to the south of France?
The great times to be there are spring, early summer, and then September, which is harvest time.
Oh, yes, okay.
But in the heat of summer, you know, one, it's too hot, and two, the French are on holiday and it's crowded.
Okay, that makes sense.
We'd rather escape the madding crowd, if you like.
Yeah, that makes sense. Of course. So, talk to us about the webinar or webinars that you will be teaching and leading with the French Wine Society this upcoming series. It's launching on March 12th.
Yes. Julian's asked me to talk about tradition and transition in the Languedoc. So really I'm going to focus on how the Languedoc has changed over the last 10, 20 years ago and how some things it's kind of gone back to its traditional roots. I suppose that's the gist of it. But I think, you know, the great thing about the Languedoc is, you know, there's so much happening there. Each time I go there, I sort of find a new wine grower. You know, there are new areas developing, new grape varieties or a new look at grape varieties that were grown 100 years ago and now being reassessed. So there's, you know, lots of things to think about.
What was the year that your book was published, The Wines of the South of France?
My book came out in 2001, so I was researching it the end of the 90s. And it covers, I mean, more than the Languedoc. It goes from Banyuls, which is the first appellation north of the Spanish border, right round to Belley, which is within the town of Nice, or city of Nice, so just before the Italian border. So it's the whole, so it takes in Roussillon, Languedoc, Provence, and I also crossed the water to Corsica, which is also worth visiting.
Great
island. And some wonderful, weird grape varieties.
It's all about place. The food, the wine, everything reflects its origin in the bottle.
I think so. I mean, that's one of the things that's so exciting about wine, that it encompasses, you know, so many other things. The wines of the Languedoc, we certainly have a sense of place. You know, when I drink my favourite, say, Fougère, which is the area nearest to our house, I can see those hills and I can feel that sort of warmth of sunshine and I can sort of smell the herbs of the hillside because the hills are covered in what the French call garrigue, and it's kind of wild, scrubby, you know, herbs and trees and things. And some of them are really quite highly scented. You've got sort of citrus flowers and things. It really sort of conjures up
the area. Do they have poisonous snakes in the vineyards in the south of France?
Yeah, I suppose they do. I can't think. I've never encountered one, but I think snakes tend to avoid humans because they're probably more scared of them than we are of them. I mean, they're more scared of us than we are of them.
In California, they come across rattlesnakes all the time in the vineyards, and I never heard anybody ever say anything about that when I've talked to people from the south of France.
Yes, I actually remember the first time I went to California, I was sort of sitting outside Phelps Winery, and this guy walked past with a rattlesnake wrapped around the thing, and I went, ugh! But I'm trying to think, have I ever encountered a snake? I think my only encounter with a snake actually is in our swimming pool, and there was a large grass snake. It had obviously fallen into the pool, and I didn't notice. When I got in the pool, I realised I was sharing it with something.
That would
but
scare me.
Screaming to my husband,
yes,
to go, get it out.
Yes, yes, yes. I would as well.
Yes.
So what year?
It was a slightly unnerving experience.
What year did you earn your Master of Wine title?
I passed exams in 1979, so I passed with a friend who's sadly no longer with us, and we doubled the female contingent of the Institute overnight.
Oh, my gosh.
At the time when the wine trade was still quite conservative, and the world of wine was very much smaller than it is now.
What the heck ever made you, I mean, that you were a totally ahead of your time. What made you want to study wine? Do you come from a family that are retailers or importers?
No, not especially. My father enjoyed wine, and we drank it on family holidays, but it wasn't anything that was, you know, nothing really to do with my family. But I was an enthusiastic member of London University's Wine Society back in the late 60s, and then I was looking for a job. Having read history at university, I knew I didn't want to teach, so I thought, well, I learned to type, somebody give me a job. And there was a job going with the Wine Society, which is an old, established, then mail order, now obviously website, wine merchant. And I went for an interview for this job, I work as a secretary, and they offered me the job and a glass of champagne. So I thought, this can't be bad. And I worked for them for 18 months, and I drank some very nice wine, because every time my boss, the chairman of the society, came for lunch in the office, which was quite frequently, you know, they opened something quite nice, and I was always given a glass to try. And so I sort of kind of snowballed, and I realized that if I was going to do more than just type somebody else's letters, I needed to do some wine trade exams.
Okay.
And, you know, this is the Wine and Spirit Education Trust runs, you know, it was then a certificate, higher certificate, and a two-part diploma. I think it's now changed a bit. And then, obviously, the goal was the Master Wine exams. So I thought, give it a go.
Did you pass the first time you sat there?
No, I passed my theory papers the first time, and unfortunately I made a mess of my white wine paper and got my white Burgundy mixed up with white Bordeaux. So
I
did it again.
Oh,
I passed two papers. I passed two papers out of three, but they fell down badly on the white wine paper.
Okay.
And then the irony is that the very first wine I was given blind as a Master of Wine, a year later, I made exactly that same mistake.
Fascinating.
So the arrogance of a 1 hour old MW. I said, oh, no, this wine is definitely La Ville Brion. And everybody else around the table was saying, I think it comes from Courton-Charlemagne. It's somewhere not too far from Meursault. Courton. It was Courton-Charlemagne.
Oh, my heaven.
So it was a very humbling experience.
Yes,
thank you for me.
Indeed. So what made you gravitate towards visiting and studying, researching on the south of France? I mean, it was to be publishing this in 2001 and to be studying it in the 90s, there wasn't a lot of action. I mean, I remember in the 80s, Georges de Boeuf started bottling varietal from the south of France. It was coming into the United States, and that was really about the most southern France wines in the first kind of introduction to the U.S. So you were, again, ahead of your time, ahead of everybody else.
Because I started writing, I was sacked from a wine trade job, so I started writing. I didn't get another wine trade job, and I wrote a book on Chablis. And then I was asked by Faber and Faber to write what they call French country wines, which was everything that was not Bordeaux, Burgundy, Alsace, Rhone, Loire, and Champagne. So rather a large bit of France.
Yes.
And that was actually published in 1990. And the area that excited me most of that was the south of France. And I remember my last research trip for that book, having lunch with somebody who's still in the southern French wine trade. And we were saying, there's a book to be written. And so then 10 years later, I said to the publishers, Faber and Faber, how about it? And certainly, I mean, the difference when I went to like an area like Pic Saint-Loup, which is part of the Côte du Languedoc, in 1987, I visited the large cooperative. In 1997, you know, there were about 20 wine growers I could have gone to see. You know, the whole area has kind of exploded, really. You just feel it's such an exciting area. There's just so much happening. There's sort of so many new things. So that's really kind of the short history of how I got there.
When you visit now, and you say that there's always something new, but do you see more and more tourists, English-speaking tourists in the south of France, and not just Provence, because it's almost cliche that everybody wants to go to Provence?
Oh, yes, this is what my bit of the Languedoc calls itself, the real south of France. This is reason, because actually it's further south than Provence. But there's certainly, I think, it's not just English tourists. Yes, there are a lot of English tourists coming visiting. Quite a lot of English people have settled there, but you also see tourists from Northern Europe. You know, Scandinavia visits a lot.
Okay.
A lot of Northern French have moved to the Languedoc.
Really?
The Department of the Aero, which is with Montpellier as its centre, is one of the largest growing areas of population in France. You know, so it's lured by the sunshine of the south.
Wow, that is very interesting to me. I remember several years ago when I was in France, people in northern France looked down their nose at people from southern France because they didn't speak French proper.
Mm. Yes, and actually, one of my winemaking friends, she has to go to Paris quite a lot to sell her husband's wine. And she says, "Oh, the Parisians, they say they can't understand me because she's got a Languedoc accent." And she still this, the implication there is a bit of prejudice. It's clear, totally unfounded and unreasonable. But Francoise certainly feels she has encountered that sort of prejudice.
We're going to go to a short break here. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Rosemary George, Master of Wine, on Wine and Dine.
Hello, I'm Julien Camus, founder of the French Wine Society. We offer online and in-classroom education about the wines of France through our network of 25 schools in the US, Canada, and now Asia. If you would like to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.frenchwinesociety.org. Merci and santé.
You're listening to iWine Radio. We're continuing our conversation with Rosemary George, Master of Wine, author of The Wines of the South of France, and she is one of the presenters of the Master Level Sud de France webinar program launching March 12th through the French Wine Society. We will have links up. If you join the French Wine Society, there is a discount to participating in the webinars. And Rosemary, if you don't mind, I would like to ask you something that I really didn't have time to be asking Matthew about, and that is, could you talk about the fact that there are so many different winds that blow through the south of France? And I mean, I'm familiar with Sirocco, but there are many other winds. Could you talk to us about that and how that contributes to the way the vines are grown, which are lower to the ground, that sort of thing?
Yes, I could do that. The first thing is to say that the names of the winds can vary or change depending on where you are.
Okay.
So the Sirocco, I think, is something more, I think to me is more Italian, and it comes in from North Africa, and you will certainly, if you get funny, fine sand from the Sahara, that's come up. The main winds, I suppose, of the Languedoc, the prevailing wind is the north wind, so it comes from the north. It's a dry wind. It quite often can be, the wind can be quite strong. And of course, the great thing about, therefore, a drying wind is it, when it does have rain, when it rains, the wind will dry up any humidity very quickly. So therefore, the need to treat your vines is much greater than if you're in the sort of more humid northern climes of, say, Chablis. So I think that means that organic viticulture is a lot easier in the Midi than it is in northern France.
Yeah.
So the wind they're not so keen on is what they call the vent marin, the wind that comes in from the sea, because that is bringing humidity in it with it, and therefore it's not so good for the vines. That I think that's the sort of those are the two contrasting winds.
And are they present at different times of the year, or is it just a function of whatever weather patterns are going on?
I think it's a function of weather patterns.
Okay.
Certainly, you're aware of the fact that the weather has shifted. I'm very much more aware of the weather there. I can see larger skies when I'm down there. And you can see the cloud formations, aware of what's going on. You're aware of the fact, it's getting a bit hazy. Yes, the wind has changed. It's probably a vent marin coming in, rather than the north, the wind from the north, the tramontane, which kind of sweeps clouds away and keeps the skies clear.
That makes sense. So you almost have a heads up. You don't even have to listen to the weather report. You can, the sky pretty much is the prediction with enough lead time.
I open our shutters in the morning and I look out on an extinct volcano called the Pic de Vissou. I can see it clearly, I know everything's fine. When I cannot see it, I know there's a climatic problem on the way, and it's sort of shrouded in cloud and a bit of mist.
When you say open the shutters, you mean you're there are no screens. You're basically opening up the house to.
Well, I think our house in France, unlike our house in England, has shutters. So I'm opening the shutters.
But do you have a window or a screen in between?
Oh, yes, I have a window. There's a window and then a shutter.
Okay, because I remember for a while I was living with some people in Fréjus. And when they would open the shutters, it was just opened. The whole house was open.
Oh, right. No. There's a window, and then it's a question of opening shutters. And you guys, I mean, shutters, they protect against, keep out cold. Well, they also keep out sort of excessive sun heat in the summer.
Mm. So
and you find, you're living, you sort of
yes.
follow the sun.
Yes, yeah.
So
oh, yes.
Closing shutters to keep, to stop, so the sun's coming in, making the inside of the house too hot.
Oh, that makes total sense. Are they thick shutters?
Yeah, they're quite strong shutters, yes.
So they have an insulating effect as well as...
Yes, as well, exactly. Yeah. They keep out both, cold and heat.
Because the wind is such an issue in the south of France, when people are looking at pictures of vineyards, the vines are trained lower to the ground, right?
Well, the bush, yes, the small bush vines are quite low. That type of training doesn't really work for some like Syrah, which has quite fragile branches. So therefore, Syrah tends to be on wires, which will give it some support. Whereas Grenache or Carignan can cope with being trained as like a bush.
Okay.
And also, there's quite good ventilation. I mean, one of the things that you need to be able to get sort of bit of breeze into the vegetation.
Yes.
To keep it from getting sort of too damp.
So, talk to us about some traditional grape varieties that we can see in that are exported. I don't know. You're probably not aware of what's coming into the United States, but
no, I'm not. I have to admit.
Let's
do red wine. The five traditional the five main varieties of the Languedoc are Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, Carignan, and Sansault. So during the 1980s, there was a movement to improving the flavors. Carignan and Sansault are the most traditional of those five.
Okay.
And Carignan in the 1980s was a rather despised grape variety, partly because it was actually badly grown. The yields were too high, and you didn't get much flavor. So Mourvèdre and Syrah were brought in, Syrah particularly, as what they call cépage améliorateur, the improving grape varieties.
Okay.
And Syrah was seen as this is going to really improve the flavors of the Languedoc, which is certainly it has helped to do so. Grenache is grown particularly in Roussillon, so a little bit further south, also in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, that's not Languedoc, and also used for the fortified wines called the Vin du Naturel, because it gets quite high alcohol levels and it's quite rich flavored. So that was also highly rated. And Mourvèdre also gives an extra sort of edge of quality. But then when people realize now they've got old Carignan vines and old Sansault vines, they're rather neglected. Actually, if you treat them properly, with low yields, careful vinification, actually Carignan is a perfect grape variety for the south of France, and Sansault too, because Sansault is not affected by drought, which Syrah can be. Syrah, if it's too hot, actually the flavors can get quite jammy. It loses that sort of classical pepperiness that you get in the northern Rhone.
Okay.
Where Carignan does really well in quite a hot climate.
Here we are there are so many, it makes so much sense. It's so logical. It's not just the tradition, but it's the transition or the innovation of being so aware of what works in your climate and your soil and what doesn't.
And you could also make the same comparison with, Carignan Blanc, which is a great variety, which really got completely overlooked. And that too is now, people are having another look at it. And it's really perfect for the Midi because it does actually have high acidity levels, so it can get ripe, but it's still got a freshness to it. Whereas if you have something like Chardonnay in the south of France, which is used for Vin de Pays Doc, mm-hmm. It tends to get rather sort of flabby.
Oh.
You know, and lose its sort of grip of acidity.
Yes. And we don't like that.
No, we do not, especially if we like Chablis. But I do.
Oh, gosh, that I do as well.
My first book was Chablis, and my most recent book is sort of 25 years on, Look at Chablis.
Can people still pick up a copy of that book on Chablis?
You probably get it. I know Amazon are out of stock, but you probably get it in one of the sort of websites that deals with older books that are out of print.
I like Sauvignon Saint Brie.
Oh, yes, the Sauvignon Saint Brie. Sauvignon, that's really good. Very good crisp Sauvignon.
Mm. Okay, and a final note here before we say adieu to each other. Rosé.
Love it. I would say it's the perfect wine for those southern sunny lunchtimes. And the south of France does make very good rosé. Because I suppose what's happened now is the winemaking methods have got better. You can ferment your grapes at a cool temperature, take greater care over it, control it better. Say some lovely fresh rosé with good acidity and a great drink for a summer's day in the Midi.
Mm. And are people drinking dry rosé in London?
Certainly, London is drinking more rosé than it used to.
Yeah.
Rosé used to form a very small part of our drinking. It was 2 or 3% of the market. But we had a very hot summer in 2003, and rosé sales took off after that. And I think they've stayed fairly high up.
Mm. Rosemary George, it's been a pleasure meeting you today on Wine and Dine. We thank you so very much for your time.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, you can learn more, and you can actually have a conversation one-on-one. Well, not one-on-one. You'd be part of a group of a live webinar if you join the French Wine Society and take that Sud de France Master level. You're listening to Wine and Dine.
iWine Radio is a production of Food Tastes Better with Wine. On the web at iwineradio.com.